Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morado.
And this is the official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on Breakfast with Taylor, with the awesome, award-winning Taylor Strano. And yeah, we're here in 2022 covering new cinema releases and new streaming releases. Whenever a movie is released, we'll review it and we might have divergent opinions on it. This is, I think a good one because you get the A and B formula.
You do. You and I, Tristan, we're always cordial, but it's probably our most contentious episode in terms of opinions on the films, which I didn't necessarily anticipate, and because we're both talking about largely acclaimed or awards contenders here, and sometimes you and I can roll our eyes and get a bit bored with them, but generally there is a level of quality. But I think we were able to sort of, we were debating the themes of the movies and how these experiments worked or didn't work, and it's always fun to go toe-to-toe with you.
In the ring, look, we're in awards season. During this month, we're still getting the touted releases, and we've got two to talk about. Later on, we'll be looking at the biopic The Eyes of Tammy Faye, starring Jessica Chastain, who also produced it alongside Andrew Garfield.
But first, we will be telling the story of the Scottish play, looking at Joel Coen and Frances McDormand, their adaptation of The Tragedy of Macbeth.
By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes.
My husband, king that shall be.
If we should fail.
We fail. Didst thou not hear a noise?
Methought I heard a voice cry, sleep no more.
Are you a man?
Aye, and a bold one, that dare look upon that which might appall the devil.
Half past seven on a Friday morning. It is time to check back in with your Movie Squad, Tristan and Simon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tristan, glad you're back. Week two, but your first week back. How was your summer viewing sort of situation? Did you watch any new movies?
I did. But then it's also important to catch up with the old ones, you know? I've never seen The One starring Jet Li, and I feel like my life is complete now because seen him beat up people in midair while Drowning Pool's Bodies plays. You know, it's a very new metal movie, if you remember
Not
that.
Just beating people up, beating up versions of himself.
That's right.
Yes.
I feel like I haven't seen that, and I now need to see that.
Incredible final shot, The One. I'll just say that. If you can find that on YouTube, it's, very 2001.
Wow. All right. Well, you've come back as a refreshed individual.
Yeah, now I feel like The One, and ready to be with three,
Squad. That's how maths works, kids. All right, we're going to start this morning with The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Yes, so why not start at the top with, and I was watching a making of documentary about this on YouTube where Denzel Washington refers to the author as a guy named Willie. And we're talking about Willie Shakespeare. Why not start at the top of artistic, integrity or whatever, like the classics, William Shakespeare. So we have another adaptation of Macbeth, the Scottish play. And I realized watching this that I've actually never seen another version of this. I know the story, But I know there's like several movies already made throughout history. But I mean, Simon, are you a Macbeth head? Is there any other version that you're a fan of?
Well, I mean, I'll talk about this when I give my opinion later, but I feel like I've seen nothing but Macbeth adaptations because obviously there's the Roman Polanski one, which is very famous. I've never seen the Orson Welles one, which is sort of well regarded. There was the Sam Worthington one from 2003, set in Melbourne. There was the Michael Fassbender one from a few years ago, directed by Justin Kurzel.
Goodness.
And there's my favourite, which I think is many people's favourite, which is Akira Kurosawa's Throne of Blood. There's also Scotland, PA with James LeGros. There's basically a Macbeth every 9 months.
Wow.
So you've done pretty well to avoid them. And that's putting aside if you've ever read or studied the play or seen it on stage. So, interesting if this is your first, not your first understanding of Macbeth, but your first cinematic adaptation.
Yeah, like I'm aware of all those versions. I've just never got around to seeing them because, I mean, I like Shakespeare, but I wouldn't say I'm like a Shakespeare like expert or enthusiast. But this one was interesting to me because one of my all-time favorite filmmakers are the Coen brothers. And it was interesting when this was announced because, the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan Coen, brothers who've made these great films together throughout the years, Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, Millions Crossing, I could go through the whole list. But usually they were kind of credited as Joel Coen as director, Ethan Coen as producer, and they were the screenwriters. Over time, that sort of shifted, and now it's shifted to the point where I think Ethan Coen is pursuing his own kind of interests, and I think he's doing theater and writing stuff for the stage. And so we have Joel Coen kind of going on his own with his film, but not necessarily on his own, because his wife is Frances McDormand, who's also produced this. And I read or got the impression that I think this is kind of her idea or something that she was pushing for. And basically after, winning the Oscar for Nomadland, let's go into, the great roles, Lady Macbeth. Let's put on Macbeth again. And why not get one of the other greatest actors of all time, Denzel Washington, involved? So this is, a great combination of talent that, I'm down for watching. So this has already been playing in some cinemas, but it's now available to stream on Apple Plus streaming service. And the basic story, if you're not familiar with Macbeth, it's about a soldier, a well-respected and loved soldier after the war, comes across three witches who predict his ascension to the throne as king. And after this encounter, his ambition starts to kind of bubble and toil, and trouble does emerge after that because he decides to make moves to become the king, and he's not going to wait around. And whenever he is kind of indecisive or sort of feeling guilt about this, there's always his wife standing by her man and imploring him to keep killing and keep his eyes on the prize, as it were. So it's a story that's been told often, I think, because it's got those kind of great elements for drama and tension and darkness. It's up there with Richard the Third in terms of those Shakespeare plays that are just about people killing each other. So I was really keen to see this, and I was also interested. I've not seen the previous Macbeth by Justin Kurzel, but from the images I've seen, it's all kind of like very kind of colorful but red and kind of yellow deserts and stuff like this. This is all black and white. It's a black and white aesthetic. So it's an interesting choice, but it's one that I really responded to because I loved the kind of the visual design that Joel Coen and his collaborators brought to this, which seems to be very much indebted to like European art house movies from the 40s, 50s, 60s. Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman is kind of offered as a comparison. But I was just kind of reacting constantly to the visuals, kind of the abstract interior designs. It's all shot in stages, but it just looks quite imposing and impressive. And look, I want to talk about the actors in a moment, but Taylor, were you familiar at all with Macbeth as a story? Are you a Shakespeare person yourself?
I can't believe that I've not seen one of the 8 million adaptations of this already that I'm aware of. But yes, I am familiar with the play. I've read it. I've studied it. Not too intensely, but Shakespeare sort of on the periphery. I think like most people who do an arts degree at some stage has encountered some sort of Shakespeare work. So yes, I'm aware of it. I know sort of what I'm going into.
Sure.
But I have not seen it adapted into a film yet.
Well, and it's definitely, this is not trying to I think, deconstruct or kind of make it kind of casual and relatable. This is kind of like going for capital A art house. And it feels like these performances, particularly with two heavyweights like Denzel and Frances McDormand, like these are great actors going for the great acting kind of, you know, of just monologues, being very theatrical. And I was with them all the way. I thought they were both impressive. And it was great to see Denzel, you know, alongside with something like Fences, but, you know, in a different mode than things like the Equalizer movies, kind of going for it. You know, he's done a Shakespeare adaptation a long time ago, Much Ado About Nothing by Kenneth Branagh. So just great to see him in this kind of mode and just being this kind of interesting take on the character, kind of very sort of graying, kind of almost like slumped and haggard kind of guy who is kind of like going, I could be king, but also kind of doubting himself at every moment. So I was really into this, and there's a great cast, including other people like Brendan Gleeson, Stephen Root, a Coen Brothers favorite, Harry Melling from Harry Potter, Corey Hawkins. But a lot of the attention has been paid on Catherine Hunter, a stage actor who plays the witches and plays all of them. And this is quite a memorable performance just in terms of what she does with her body and her voice. So I'm interested. I don't want to be a Macbeth here and take up the microphone time. But Simon, you've seen this film. How did you respond to the kind of the style and the performances?
Yeah, I feel a bit differently to you, Tristan. But I think it's so interesting hearing you both say, yeah, familiar with the play, Taylor. You studied it like so many people have. Never seen it adapted, and I think you are the prime audience for the tragedy of Macbeth because Joel Coen and Frances McDormand, they're using the original language here. They're not modernizing it in any way. And if this was your first interaction with Macbeth, I'd caution you because the language is hard to pass. You know, it's preferable that you've read it or you've gleaned the understanding of what is being conveyed, and then to see it in this sort of German expressionistic style with these great actors, that's a great way to see it for the first time. But after 20 times or whatever it's been, and, you know, I've similarly studied it, seen it on stage, even with this combination of talent, my eyes were drooping a little bit. And some of the choices here, just, you know, they're experiments. And like you say, this is an older Macbeth and Lady Macbeth than we normally get. Some of them work, some of them don't work. I think Catherine Hunter is great as the witches. I think Denzel's really good as Macbeth. I actually think Frances McDormand falls a little short here, unfortunately, because Lady Macbeth is a meaty role. It's a great, famous role, maybe the most famous from this play, but it does require the actor to go from 0 to 100. And there are moments where she and both, you know, her and Denzel, they're Americans in a largely English cast. That's fine and it's interesting. When she's very, when she's playing it, you know, realistic and she's employing realism and her Frances McDormandness, it really works. When she has to go to that next level, I'm sure on the stage it's fantastic, but they weren't two great tastes that went great together here, I thought. So I have to admit my eyes were drooping a little throughout this movie because it looks stunning, but ultimately it's Macbeth. You know Macbeth. If you've seen it many times before, I don't think it offers that much new or really makes the case for why it needs to be redone. But there are some striking images, and I think the final shot, the climactic fight, really, really beautiful stuff. And I really like Corey Hawkins as Macduff. I think he probably gives, after Catherine Hunter, the best performance in the film.
And, I mean, like, yeah, I think I like this more than you, but there is also, like, in terms of what you were saying, there is, if I had to get into the detail of it, there is a point where I feel like there's a part missing, or you're kind of seeing these characters go from kind of, you know, conniving to insane. And there was, like, I felt like there was a part missing where we saw that transition. But then it was also like 140 minutes. So it was kept under 2 hours. So at least, you know, thankful for small favors there. But yeah, it's interesting to hear your reaction, Simon, because I think for some people, if you know this text, this is kind of, it's not really reinventing it. And I think that I've seen some other responses that were a bit kind of assumed that with the Coen brothers or Joel Coen, that there would be that kind of quality, maybe the kind of the comedy that they sometimes bring to things, and it's not really there.
Because the play can be funny, and it's dripping in irony, the kind of exact irony that the Coen brothers traffic in. But I think the thing they can't surmount, or Joel can't surmount here, is that if you've seen Macbeth or read Macbeth or know Macbeth, you can't not watch this academically. Because like you can only watch it in comparison to everything you've seen before. There's really no... there's invention, but there's no discovery. That was my experience with it.
I've said the word Macbeth so many times.
We're all cursed. Absolutely.
All right. Let us know if you have seen or if you are to watch The Tragedy of Macbeth and if you have thoughts about it. 0405 921 921. In a couple of cinemas, but also on the Apple Plus streaming platform. We're back for part two of Movie Squad in just a moment.
Tammy Faye, what'd you do?
Hello, Mother. This is Jim Baker, my husband.
It's all part of our mission to help people. Anyone who's hurting or they feel like they've been left out, God has a plan for us.
What did he tell you to do this time?
Jesus keeps a-taking me higher and higher.
Jim will preach, and I'll sing.
Higher and higher. God does not want us to be poor.
Mr. Fowler, a pleasure.
Now God has a voice in this fight.
Who's he fighting?
Liberal agenda. Homosexual agenda.
Faith isn't political.
You can't talk to him like that.
Jerry Falwell is a powerful man, Tammy Faye.
She's a firecracker, Jim.
If everyone watching could double their pledge just for one month.
God loves you. He really does.
We're not doing anything wrong, though.
Is that a question?
For part two this week, Simon, we're changing pace, I want to say dramatically, talking about the eyes of Tammy Faye.
Yeah, we are changing pace. So we talked about Joel Coen's very stark, expressionistic, black and white Macbeth adaptation. And now we're going for something very garish and gauche with the eyes of Tammy Faye, which is a biopic and an adaptation actually of a documentary by the same name. Of Tammy Faye Baker, who is played here by Jessica Chastain and is probably well known by those who are familiar with her as a very over-the-top televangelist who came up in the 70s and 80s alongside her husband, Jim Baker. And Scandal followed their downfall, but this movie tracks their rise. And begins with Tammy Faye as a teenager, played by Jessica Chastain. convincingly, she actually is very good in this movie, following Tammy Faye over the decades. But we were introduced to her first as a little girl, but then as a teenager who's sort of a devout Christian, but also a very positive woman, very loving, big-hearted, and deep in her conviction, and falls in and in love with Jim, played by Andrew Garfield, who is a similarly devout and charismatic preacher of sorts, who basically has a different take to some of the older school, Pentecostal preachers that she's brought up with, and says that actually loving God and being Christian is joy. It's rock and roll, and it's metaphorical and literal wealth. You know, these are the benefits you get if you believe in God. And they take their sort of, they start hawking their wares, their spiritual wares on the road, and it coincides their growing popularity with the advent of televangelism. You know, the idea of having religious services on TV, they bring a bit of, let's say, production value to that idea. It's not just about church on TV. It's about TV as church. They have these Tonight shows. They do puppet shows. They do variety shows, all of which is kind of selling and sharing the word of God. But there is this constant telethon going on their network, allowing people to call up and donate and be partners and maybe buy their way into heaven, but definitely fund Tammy and Jim's very lavish lifestyle. Taylor, Tristan, are you familiar with the Baker's story or, televangelism, as it were?
Yeah, definitely. I think most people, you would hope, would be aware of this. We've listened to a couple of great podcasts. We've covered them on PeakerPod talking specifically about this story. So pretty well-versed.
That's interesting. So again, similar to, what we're talking about with Macbeth, when you know the story and you know where it's going, and even if you don't, you know the shape of a biopic. There's a rise, there's a fall. You know, what are you going to get that's different in a movie like this? And I was actually surprised to see, Tristan, you know, that the movie's gotten some pretty mixed reviews. Jessica Chastain's been nominated for a lot of awards. I'm sure she'll get an Oscar nod for it, and I think deservedly so. I really like this movie, sort of contrary to most of the reviews that I've seen. And I think it helps that Michael Showalter is the director here. People may know him as a comedian and writer from projects like Wet Hot American Summer, but he also did direct The Big Sick. He co-created and directed Search Party, the TV show with Elias Shawkat. And I think he brings to this movie, even though it is a melodrama, it is a biopic, he sort of brings that wry sense of humor, this understanding that yeah, the audience knows where we're going here, but it's able to wink back at you. And compared to something like House of Gucci, which we saw last year, that was sorely lacking the kind of camp element that was required for a story that outrageous. I think this movie captures the camp nature of Tammy Faye, and it's sort of larger than life in a way that was very compelling, and I found it quite funny, but there is still that satire there. It's still kind of piercing the idea of American exceptionalism about the commercialization of religion. And yeah, there's still some interesting stuff here to chew on. Tristan, I know you've seen this as well. How did you take to Tammy Faye?
Well, I guess, you know, it's good to be back, but also to kind of have, you know, divergent opinions. Because I thought this was okay. It was definitely like a biopic, and then that formula of a biopic. I was watching it thinking about, like, I don't know, Paul Thomas Anderson films and how, like, scenes develop in the dialogue, and you kind of get a sense of the character. Whereas this movie is definitely one of those movies where every scene, there's a point, and you get the point, and then it moves on to the next scene. So I thought it was a bit standard in that way. And then one thing I couldn't get over was that they use prosthetics on Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield to kind of make them look like these people. You see pictures of Jim and Tammy Baker, and they were just like, you know, they were personalities, but they were also kind of just like, I don't know, ordinary people who became superstars. So you have this, you know, ideally they should be played by character actors who might resemble them, but they're cast these movie stars, and then you have Jessica Chastain with this, like, it's just too distracting. I just found it too distracting. This lower jawline that's been grafted onto her face, and, you know, in the way like Jared Leto in House of Gucci, this kind of idea that prosthetics equals, like, you know, great acting. So I would just,
Tristan, please do not invoke that name when we're talking about this movie.
I love Jessica Chastain generally. I think she's great, though. I mean, her choices, you know, in recent years. Who knows? But, like, I liked her in this. So I thought she was very good. Andrew Garfield, I've come to grow more and more in love with this guy. I love him as a performer. Here, he was just too young looking. He couldn't make the transition to when they were playing 40 or 50 year olds. I was like, this guy looks like he's in a high school play with a bit of, like, white hair in his makeup. You know, so I thought it was okay. I thought it could have been better in terms of the casting, or just, like, dropping the prosthetics and letting them carry on, as it were. And then also I feel like sometimes it's focused on Tammy, and the more interesting parts of it are kind of in the background about this kind of whole televangelistic kind of, like, Christian kind of... And it's stuff that's already kind of been covered with shows like The Righteous Gemstones, even though that's a more kind of out there, wackier kind of take on it. So I thought it was okay. But, you know, if you're a Jessica Chastain fan, this is her producing it, I think, gunning for some kind of award. So, you know, I think she is good. And she sings really good in it as well.
Yeah, I'm going to defend the prosthetics. I'm going to defend the prosthetics, and you don't often hear me saying that. But it reminded me of Wet Hot American Summer, and Michael Showalter plays President Reagan in Wet Hot American Summer. And yes, it does look fake, and you can't not notice their jowls throughout the entire movie, and they just keep growing. It's like, oh my God, these jowls. They start with jowls, but they just keep getting bigger and wider. Their faces just become these squares by the end of the movie. Yeah. But that sort of worked for me in the heightened element of it. A point of the film that I really did like, though, that was sort of, you know, and there's much to be said about, well, does the film let Tammy Faye off the hook for Jim's crimes? You know, without getting into it, you know, there's a lot that goes unsaid about, you know, how naive was she? How manipulative was she? But I do think it does put her on the hook a little bit. But what I really liked about the film is that so often in the movie, both she and Jim talk to God and say they've talked to God. And what you discover throughout the course of the movie is that they're talking to themselves. And that's not to dispute anyone else's relationship with God, but these particular characters, the idea that God forgives them or that God is urging them to do what they're doing, and you realize, oh, well, that's the narcissism, right? That's the narcissism of people who use God's name or religion to do terrible things. And I thought that was a nice undersold and not explicit point they were making in the movie.
I just received a message from my mum, who is a honorary movie squad member. She's just sent the word lipstick. That was like literally the only thing that she sent. No context. But I guess when you talk about Tammy Faye, you don't really need context. I haven't seen this yet, but I'm really excited to see this. I was watching an interview with Jessica Chastain, who I also am a fan of, and she kind of made that point about when you get through all the makeup and you get through the hair and the outlandish outfits, it feels like Jessica maybe, I don't know, like not drank the Kool-Aid, but she was very like soft and warm and loving the way that she talks about Tammy Faye. So
yeah,
interesting.
And I think she's a producer. Well, she is a producer on this film. So I kind of chalk her up as, you know, a co-creator to it at a point, you know, hey, I want to make this movie about Tammy Faye. And yeah, I'm sure she was a loving person. I think their ministry also did some many terrible things that need to be accounted for. But as Tristan's pointing out, Tammy Faye, even if she is sympathetic here, she is depicted in a bit of a grotesque manner. So, you know, you can exit the movie saying, ah, this movie totally drank the Kool-Aid, or actually it gave him what for.
All right. Let us know if you're off to see this one, if you already have. 0405-921-921. That is Movie Squad. Divided opinions this week, folks.
We need to reset and calibrate, Tristan. Usually we're in concert, but that's all right. A bit of, maybe that's what 2022 holds for us.
What's this going to do to the algorithm at the end of the year?
It's the David and Margaret era, you know? Like, you know, it's just going to... One says yes, one says no. All That's right. what we want.
Listeners, which one do you trust?
Yeah, oh, God. It's fraught with danger. That's Movie Squad for this week. Tristan and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back again next week on RTRFM.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's two new movies, but if we have to do the maths, it's four different opinions.
Wow, yeah.
But look, it was...
Five if you count Karen Strano, the cameo that we got at the end there.
A fantastic cameo. Thank you so much. Look, but it's also like, I was glad to have watched The Eyes of Tammy Faye, and, you know, I didn't, like, hate it or anything. It was just a kind of, I think, you know, it's just a moderate, you know, a response to something that you liked. And, you know, that's how it goes with movies. We all have different reactions.
And likewise, The Tragedy of Macbeth. I enjoy watching things academically, but do I recommend that to my parents and my friends and my family? I don't know. But I think hopefully we've conveyed the kinds of viewers who would enjoy and get something out of these movies. You tell us. Maybe we both got it wrong somehow. Tell us on Facebook, email RTRFM. Just generally tell us how you feel about these movies. But of course, share your love for Movie Squad Podcast on iTunes and rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends and get the word out there, because we've got a whole new year of movie reviewing ahead of us.
Yeah, and look, you can be the reviewer. Give us 5 stars and we order you to do that, and let everyone know if they haven't come across a great movie reviewing show like Movie Squad, please recommend, and we'll catch you next time.